Welcome on into the Phillies Today podcast. I, of course, am your host, Buzz, and a lot to get to in this one. Phillies lose 7-5 at the hands of the Atlanta Braves, and kind of a few takeaways from this one. A number of things. First of all, Phillies, they dropped to 7-3 on the season, so we are officially 10 games in, 1/16th. Off the way through the season, not even quite, but 1/16 through the season. They are still technically in first place in the NL East as they enter play on Wednesdays. The Mets 8-4, Marlins, Nationals, Braves get their second win of the season, so they try and get back into their winning ways. Bit of a weird game. A couple takeaways. Number one is Johan Rojas, for a guy who was dubbed as a defensive slash like late innings pinch runner guy, mostly a defense first guy, he does make an awful lot of mistakes in the field. I remember last year he kind of, hot dogged a play in center field and dropped it. And, in Tuesday's game, he doesn't call off Edmundo Sosa, who is literally playing his first ever game in the major leagues in left field. And by the way, what an unbelievable job by Edmundo Sosa to quite literally, in this first ever inning. Now, he's played it in spring training, but his first ever inning in a major league game that counts in left field to rob a home run. Just unbelievable stuff. I mean, he is an athlete. He's a ball player. Every ounce of respect you could give to this guy, every tip of the cap you can give to Edmundo Sosa, he deserves, because he just is that special. I would hope that he finds his way in the lineup again on Wednesday's game. He just is that good. So, but Johan Rojas needs to call off Edmundo Sosa on that ball into center field. He needs to be able to, take control, take command out there. Watching the broadcast on Tuesday, they clearly showed Paco Figueroa, who is the first base coach, but also in charge of the outfielders, kind of speaking to Rojas. Rob Thompson also had a little chat with him and then spoke post game about, that he needs to, get on that and take command, take charge, and just yell out, "I got it." The only little mistake Sosa made was he apparently yelled, like, "You got it," which you're not supposed to do. You should just stay quiet. You should let the center fielder yell, "I got it. Get the hell out of the way." So that was really, really frustrating to see. And that ended up being costly, and it ultimately cost them a couple of runs. I mean, Zach Wheeler, don't think he had his best stuff in the game on Tuesday anyway, but he ended up going 5 1/3, allowing 5 earned runs, 3 walks, and 8 hits. But certainly that gets your pitcher out of a rhythm. Certainly something like that, he allows a couple more runs, he unravels a little bit more. Generally Zach Wheeler is better than that anyway, but it certainly didn't help. And that's something that, again, if Johan Rojas is going to find his way into the lineup, against right-handers more often, because that's when you're going to want to get someone like Marsh out of the lineup, he's got to be sound in the field. He's got to be sound in defense. He covers a lot of ground, but sometimes he doesn't always make the smart play or the heady play, or in this case, know to take command of that outfield. So that was one takeaway. Another takeaway, like I said, Wheeler just not having his best stuff. I'll take another takeaway here. The reaction to the bullpen being bad seems a little over the top for me thus far. I mean, I know it's not this. We have this tendency as Philadelphia sports fans, and I think Phillies fans in particular, to really hone in on like the year-to-year standard that the team sets, and not what's really going on with Major League Baseball. I was talking to someone during the game on Tuesday, actually Mike Angelina, our senior producer, that there's just no, like, Tanner Banks being the third best lefty in your bullpen, I don't know how many major league teams have, have a great third lefty in their bullpen. And it is a decline from where this team was a year ago, because prior to Hoffman getting hurt and prior to how the bullpen kind of blew up in, I'll say the postseason and late in the year, it was a real strength of the team. You felt really, really confident about Hoffman and Schramm to the point where they were all-stars, both of them, deservedly so. And then you could go to guys like Kirkering as well, and Alvarado sometimes as well. And Banks was, solid, I would say. It's frustrating that now, because they acquire Romano, who had a dreadful first week. And the hope is that he is able to turn it around. But the bullpen does look worse than last year, so therefore everyone automatically dubs it's a bullpen problem. Do we not remember, as Phillies fans, maybe some people don't who weren't as locked in back then, but the 2020 bullpen was the worst in like the history of baseball? I mean, that team, I guess I'm just a little numb to it, just because that team was so incredibly bad out of the pen, that like, this is workable, this is manageable. I really hope that Thompson does not overtax. You can't go to Schramm and Kirkering and Alvarado every single night. There are going to be nights where you need, Banks to get lefties out. There's going to be nights where you need a guy like Jose Ruiz to get outs for you, Joe Ross to get outs for you. But like right now, it doesn't feel like Jordan Romano should be anywhere near the top of, the Dodgers lineup, let's say. And Thompson, trying to have some faith in his guy, goes to him in a spot like that in the Dodgers series, and it didn't pay off. So that was frustrating to see. But I do think that some of the reaction, not all of it, but some of the reaction needs to be just pumped a little bit on this Phillies bullpen. So that was a takeaway I had as well. Did like the lineup that came out prior to Tuesday's game. Again, really glad that Thompson willing to get Sosa some playing time, and also get him some playing time specifically in left field. I think that is a welcome development for all Phillies fans. Would imagine Kepler is back in there on Wednesday, but certainly a welcome development to see Sosa getting his way into the Phillies lineup. And again, they hit him for a lefty, and Marsh also wasn't in the starting lineup. They hit with Rojas. And the fact that he is willing to, it also created the situation where you have two lefties on the bench, like Kepler and Marsh both ended up pinch hitting in the game. So you ask yourself, like, what role does Cody Clemens even have on the roster? But generally speaking, I've been happy with the lineup construction. Rob Thompson has definitely been sticking to that. When a lefty's on the mound, Trey leads off, and when a righty's on the mound, Schwarber leads off, kind of deal, which means that these two remaining games in the Braves series, we're going to see Schwarber leading off. But I think it's been encouraging to see, and I think this has been a generally well-managed team thus far. I think even especially we've seen a couple of moves that Rob Thompson probably doesn't make in the past. I think I alluded to it last week, the home opener, that he clearly made a move, pinch hitting Turner and then putting in Rojas in the outfield doesn't feel like a move he's necessarily made in the past. So that was kind of encouraging to see. And also I think there's there's something to be said for sitting Alec Bohm down on Sunday. He can say it was a scheduled day off. Don't really buy it. I don't think anyone really buys it. The Realmuto thing about how often he actually plays, I mean, they came into the season saying he would play less frequently. Don't really know if I buy that, given that he took one off day really thus far. I guess there's one due to injury, but one off day where he was noted as healthy. So we'll monitor that throughout the course of the season. Also a little weird with the off days thus far, to really try and get into a groove of things. And there's another off day on Monday of this week, but Tuesday's game started a streak of, what is it? They have 16 games in a row without an off day, obviously weather pending. And two more games in Atlanta, three games in St. Louis, and then four games home against the Giants, actually. And three games against the Marlins at home. So, and actually, there's a Mets series in New York after that that gets factored in as well. No off day until the team travels to Chicago late in the season. So a lot of bullpen management coming here, a lot of off days, so to speak, to manage. Again, really interested early in the year whether or not Thompson kind of sets a different tone with these lineups or not. I think that'll be interesting to look at. I think the bullpen management will be something else also really to keep an eye on here. One other just kind of hodgepodge of thoughts here. They definitely need more out of the group formerly known as the daycare. Stott's really not doing a whole lot at the plate. He had a big single in the Dodgers series, but for the most part, not doing a whole lot with his at-bats. Marsh, in particular against lefties, doesn't feel like he's adding a whole lot. And Boehm is hitting down to 200 now and still doing with like some of the mopey stuff. So it's kind of frustrating to see there as well. I don't think there's any real cause for concern. They do still have an opportunity that they will need to win games 2 of 3 in Atlanta to do so, to win each of their first four series. The Braves obviously entered the series with one win, so it would be kind of nice to not go down there and lose 2 of 3, though it happens. But if they could really build a nice little lead in the standings, I know you're not allowed to look at the standings until Memorial Day, but if they could build themselves a nice little lead in the standings between now and then, that would certainly be good to see. Other random thought. So Alvarado doesn't. So, you know, guys who I would imagine would be available on Wednesday. Would think Kirkering's down, throwing 27 pitches. If he goes again on Wednesday, definitely won't be available on Thursday. Banks also might be down. Strom only threw 6 pitches as he finished out the 6th. So he should be good to go. Ross should be good to go. Should have Ruiz good to go. No reason he should. Alvarado should be good to go. And who am I missing here? You know, the remainder of... They use Strom, Kirkering, Banks. So, you know, guys who didn't use Alvarado should be good. Ruiz should be good. Ross should be good. Romano should be good. And there's someone else who I'm forgetting whose name will come to me at some point here. But, you know, that is kind of where I think the team stands entering Wednesday. And listen, I don't think there's anything. Who did I not mention? Oh, Carlos Hernandez will also be good to go. I mean, kind of it's a last resort kind of thing, but he is your 8th guy out of the pen. Talking about the Braves side of things for a second, you know, these are wins that you need to build up on the Braves when they don't have guys like Schrider and Acuna earlier in the season. I mean, the lineup just is not as daunting right now as certainly it would be in different circumstances. So I think that building up wins from that perspective is critical and big. This is not the same Braves team. You know, it used to be so daunting going to Atlanta with this particular team because it felt like they just could not for the life of them, either at Turner Field, but mostly Truist Park, they could just not buy a win down there. And now that they are in a situation where it feels like, you know, a little bit of a mental edge was gained in 22 and 23 when they won those division series. Last year was a down year for the Braves, injuries aside. And now this year it feels like they're kind of on a more even playing field after the way things have gone over the past couple of seasons. These need to be wins. They have 3 games with Atlanta here, already lost one of them. In Atlanta, and then they don't step on the field with them again, I think, until late May. So again, you know, you kind of got to capitalize. And then late June, I know they go back to Atlanta, and then I believe they step on the field with them one last time towards the end of August. So very well could be the only time that they play, you know, without those guys in Acuna and Strider. So early in the season wins and trying to gain a bit of a lead on them, kicking them while they're down, I think is huge. I will give a shout out to Schwarber. First of all, was a double shy of the cycle last night, but hit a big triple, you know, immediately picking up his teammate when, you know, Rojas lets a ball drop, clearly made a mistake. Phillies went down 3-1, and the Phillies did immediately tie the game. So one of my big takeaways early in the season has been this team just showing unbelievable resiliency and fight. I think that continued to display on Tuesday in Atlanta, which I think is critical and something to keep an eye on. It never feels like this team is out of it. It never feels like this team is, dead in the water, so to speak. So I think that is something certainly of note. And I think it's also worth noting that this team never, like, I never go into a game thinking like they're clearly the worst team. Like, on paper, yes, they're worse than the Dodgers, but it never, like, your eyes wouldn't tell you that if you didn't know the records. If you were to use the old cliche and quote unquote throw these records out when these two teams get together, you wouldn't necessarily know it. Other things from around baseball on Tuesday that I wanted to hit, which was just kind of funny, which was Zach Hample, which has, you know, long been a famous baseball fan in baseball fan community. He was in the outfield of Steinbrenner Field on Tuesday for the Angels Rays game, and quite literally the Angels got a home run. Lyron Parris hit a two-run home run in what ended up being a 4-3 final score that Christopher Morel, who was the Rays left fielder, went up for the ball, and clearly, now he reached in, I do believe, upon replay, Morel does appear to reach into the stands, and by rule, the Steve Bartman rule, if you will, if a player has to reach into the stands, if he breaks the plane of the wall in either fair territory with a home run or foul territory, just trying to catch a foul ball, if he reaches into the fans' space, that is fair game for the fan to then touch. And there is no penalty to that fan, and there is no penalty to the team who either gets benefit, who either benefits from it, and, you know, it's just, it's as if no one interfered. If the fan reaches into the playing field, that's a different story. That's fan interference. You're talking about a fan getting ejected and out, all that stuff. And so Zach Hample in left field of Steinbrenner Field last night, ball gets hit to left, Morel reaches into the crowd, not by much, but by a little bit, and Hample sticks up his glove, catches the home run, shows it how great it was that he caught it. Replay showed him a million times, and yeah, the Angels got two runs out of it, ended up winning the game 4-3. It was all over social media. Pretty funny stuff. Listen, it is fair game. I think it's a, first of all, this could only ever happen at like Steinbrenner Field where the Rays are, because it's a spring training stadium, and they are playing their major league games there. So like the outfield seating, and I'm using the term seating loosely, is like just concrete with some like bar stool seating. So it's easy to run around out there. It's kind of just like a free for all. Same thing in Sacramento right now with the A's, where it's kind of just like grass seating. So he clearly makes his way over to, you know, catch this ball because he's got a lot of room to run around, a lot of ground to cover. This would not be possible at Citizens Bank Park, for instance. So I think that's worthy of note in this weird 2025 season where not one but two teams are playing in minor league ballparks. People just love to hate on the guy. Like, I get it. It's like a dorky, you know, hobby he has. It's grown man carrying, you know, holding a glove. If someone else did this, no one would care. Definitely not as much. And it's objectively impressive what he does. And technically didn't break any rules. Now, I do think it's a bad rule. I think it's objectively ridiculous that a fan can impact the game this way. I think regardless of whether, if you're allowed to make a catch leaning into the stands and someone, and like if that is within the rules, and someone interferes that with that, I'm not saying that the fan should be kicked out for making a mistake if they go up and catch something and someone's reaching in. But, like, you know, I think interference should still be called if the umpires can determine that an out was the most likely outcome if the fan was not there. Then I think that should be the case. So, I don't know. It's kind of a weird situation. I think it's a bad rule, but within the rules, no foul play, you know, happened. And I think that's just kind of a funny and weird circumstance that happened in last night's A's and Rays game. So not that either of those teams are really, the Angels in particular, expected to make a playoff push, but if one of those teams, you know,
if one of those teams you know, falls a game short of like a draft pick or a playoff spot or something like that, they can always look back to Zach Hample swinging the outcome of that game. That's going to do it for today's episode of Phillies Today. Stay tuned for more episodes right here on the same page. My partners in crime on this, Justin Morgenstein, Francisco Rojas, they always put out good stuff. So stay tuned for more Phillies Today.